Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
iZotope Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance are launching a whole bunch of super hot deals for the Summer of Sound sale. From now until the 6th of July 2023, iZotope are offering all their software for 50% or more off, including the comprehensive mixing and mastering bundle Music Production Suite 5, as well as flagship tools like Ozone, RX, Neutron, and more. All things I use to edit this podcast. Visit iZotope.com and check out the frankly colossal range of things that you can get at extraordinary prices, and take your mixing and editing to a whole new level. Listen up, dear listeners in the UK. There's a brand new guitar show this year, the Brighton Guitar Show. It's a one-day show happening on the 15th of July at the Brighton Racecourse, and it's going to be great. We'll be there along with loads of your favourite boutique and major brands like Two Notes Audio Engineering, Chapman Guitars, Fidelity Guitars, Thought BFX, Pedal Patch, Bright Onion Pedals, Ranger FX, NRG FX, Great Eastern FX, Iverson Guitars, Kurt Mangan Strings, Mayberry, Leighton, Lemon Audio, Xander Circuitry, and loads more. What more excuse do you need to come to sunny Brighton, the birthplace of guitar nerds, than a guitar show full of guitars, pedals, effects, and accessories? Come say hi, hang out, have a beer, and check out all the cool gear with Matt, JD, and I. You might even see a few of the OG guitar nerds hosts knocking about. For tickets, visit brightonguitarshow.co.uk or check them out on social media with Brighton Guitar Show. See you there. Matt.
Joe.
I was feeling peckish the other day, but I've been having some weird food cravings, and I really wanted to eat a watch for lunch. But it was too time consuming.
Hello, dear listener. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Oh,
I don't like that you've also got a soundboard now.
Oh, I know, I know. I can just, you know, what do you want? Want some applause? Yeah, they're good enough for you, Joe. They're good enough for you.
That's great.
I promise I won't use the soundboard anymore.
Thanks. Thank you. But yes, welcome back, Matt. You had a week off. Welcome back, dear listener, to another episode of the podcast. It's Glastonbury Festival over the last weekend. You know, big, awesome festival in the world, maybe?
Is it the biggest festival in the world?
No, there are definitely bigger ones out in weird deserts in America and stuff like that. But, you know, it's definitely the most famous festival in the world.
Probably one of the most long-running festival, surely, as well. Like, it's been going since what? When was it? Was it 50 years this year?
Was it really? Blimey. I had no idea. Well, that's very long. But, of course... Sorry? Have I ever been? I went in 2005, and I went again in 2007. In 2005, the reason I didn't go in 2006 was because there was no 2006, because in 2005, that was the year that it was so wet that they couldn't do it the following year. That was where people's tents were being washed away.
Oh yeah,
it was awful. Yeah, it was really awful. It's just, you know, all of your stuff was just permanently completely soaked for an entire weekend.
Oh man, I mean, and this weekend, surely the polar opposite for American listeners, England has been like an oven for probably about 3 weeks now, or certainly an oven for us. I mean, it makes it impossible. I don't know about you, Joe. It makes it impossible to play guitar. Sticky necks, sweaty, rubbish.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, I'm sort of, you know, trying to air out my office, but I'm aware that there's a lot of setups that are going to need to be redone on things over the, you know, after this, but oh well. But yeah, you know, Glastonbury, always a cracking festival for seeing lots of amazing gear. I always found it difficult when I go, Matt, because to be honest, it's a 30-minute walk if you're lucky between the two main stages. So just trying to schedule when you're going to go and see what is very difficult. Also, I appreciate there's lots and lots of stuff there, but it tends to be quite down the middle, you know, music wise. It's not, there's nothing really that left field, and it's quite expensive. So I'd be paying so much money to go and see only smaller stages. So, you know, it's never quite for me, but nonetheless, lots of the world's biggest bands there, some incredible performances this time and some great gear to check out.
Yeah. Basically, you saw none of it, Joe. So you're going to fill me in what happened in the world of Glasto. I'm sure it was pedal boards aplenty.
Yeah.
I mean, I think actually just the sheer amount of, I mean, I don't know how long it takes to build that festival, but the sheer amount of just scheduling and stuff that must just have to happen at all times to run that is mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some real, like, heavy lifting bands when it comes to gear as well. You know, it's like, you see, I guess there are things like Guns N' Roses where everything's been, all the equipment is very tailored around the fact that they know how to do a stadium show. So, you know, they're all on wireless stuff. Their amps are very much geared up at the back of stage, and there's probably a lot of reamping and not real world stuff happening, digital things to help everything along. That's a band that know their way around a stadium show. You get a lot of bands like I was watching Young Fathers or even Arctic Monkeys and Warpaint that. You know, they're all like cables. There's no wireless setups, and their amp setups are a load of amps. You know, even the War on Drugs with his little wall of random like basements and some random Fender Champ style amplifier. You know, they've got just all this stuff and these big pedal boards, loads of gear, loads of cables all over the place. And I'm like, God, this must be a nightmare. You know, fine if it's your own show, but when you've got the quick turnaround of a festival, this must be an absolute effort for everyone involved.
Absolutely. I think no shared backline. It's not like, oh, can't make
stuff. I didn't bring a drum stool.
I need to borrow your, you're the headline act. I need to borrow your bass cab.
Yeah.
There's none of that. It's like, bring your own. I mean, I remember standing on the viewing platform side of stage at Reading in 2016 between Red Hot Chili Peppers, who were headlining, and I think Imagine Dragons with maybe the band before. Right. And just like watching the changeover was mad. Like everything was, it was almost like just everything was on wheels, and it was just like slide stuff off one side and it just all comes on the other, and it's just like it all works instantly.
Yeah.
It's pretty mad. It's like, it's got to be a weird thing to, like, I guess be a roadie and do that kind of things, but it's got to be a very, very different, like, no time, all line checks, no sound checks whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be pretty nerve-wracking at times.
Yes. Yeah, it must be extraordinarily intense for them. But what
was hot then, Joe?
Well, we'll talk a little bit about gigs. We've got a lot of other things, as well as, dear listener, kind of this new thing we're going to try on this week's episode as well. So I'll talk about some of the gear that I thought was really cool. Warpaint, always a fantastic band. You know, I just mentioned them a second ago. Always a fantastic band for equipment. You know, they've got two guitarists and a bass player. the bass does such a lot of the melody work, such a lot of the heavy lifting in that band. Always a gorgeous old Rickenbacker 4003. I've seen them a couple of times. I can't remember if it's always the same Rickenbacker. I think it might be. It's always like a white Rickenbacker 4003 with a black guard. Could be a 4001. And you know, it's that white on Rickenbackers. It does a wonderful job of like tobacco yellowing over time.
Yeah.
And hers has done just that. And it is gorgeous. It's absolutely brilliant. It sounds fantastic. Really tasteful use of like a light flanger, a light bit of chorus here and there, as well as just a straight up edge of breakup Ampeg SVT tone. Always great. But then almost backed up by these two more ambient guitars. Both guitarists. Now, I'm pretty sure one of the guitarists, I can't remember her name. Is it Emily Cockle? I think she used to play something else in the other one. I could be getting that the wrong way around, but basically they both play Jaguars now. Gorgeous Jaguars. Gorgeous, like a lovely, again, Olympic white Jaguar with a torque guard, and it's just worn and aged, and they were a one guitar band, you know. They don't change. They don't have a new guitar for each song, and those are their instruments, and they just look gorgeously worn in. They sounded fantastic. One of them going through a Roland jazz chorus. I can't remember what the other one was, maybe a deluxe. But it was just fantastic. Wonderful sounding bands. They were always great to watch. And sounded fantastic. Really, really interesting sound.
Oh, nice.
I mean, gear-wise,
you can't beat a JC.
Yeah. Well, exactly. For that sort of jangly tone, loads of delays, loads of reverbs. You want a clean pedal platform for that sort of thing, because they've got that really, it's that ambient soundscape sort of feel to a lot of that dreaminess to a lot of their stuff. The jazz chorus just does a perfect job of staying articulate at the same time as being, you know, a great, covered in, you know, soupy delay and reverb amplifier. So that was very good. Arctic Monkeys for me were the big highlight of Glastonbury, of everything I saw. You know, there were some fantastic things like interestingly enough, dear listener, on our Facebook group, Sam Brooksby put up a post about, you know, gear to check out, what people had seen at Glastonbury, which was great. And so lots of people have commented on there if you're interested in seeing some of the stuff. It was lovely to see James Dean Bradfield with an Eastman Juliet, which is pretty cool.
I really want one of those. We talked about them a few weeks ago, didn't we? I think they're wicked.
That man always has taste in guitars, you know. I love his white Les Paul, his Les Paul Custom. It's always gorgeous. So that was nice to see. I didn't see the set, but that was nice to see that. And Davy Johnstone, the guitarist for Elton John, he was rocking some absolutely fantastic instruments. Gorgeous sound throughout. I mean, he came on with like a flying V, but it was this lovely sort of mellow, again, edge of breakup, sort of bluesy rock and roll tone from this flying V, which is not the sort of sound. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's just a two humbucker guitar, dear listener. Of course, it's capable of those sorts of sounds, but it's not really the application you ever see a flying V being used in. And it was just wonderful. So that was great. And he had a range of Les Pauls. He had one Yellow Brick Road Les Paul with like a graphic of Elton John on it, which was kind of fun and cool. But
I've just seen. Is that the one that says Captain Fantastic?
And no, Captain Fantastic one. He's been playing for the last 20 years. He's been in Elton John's band forever. That was another one. He had a similar guitar that I think was maybe for this show, or certainly another one with a custom graphic on it, which was equally as garish, but kind of fun to see. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, Arctic Monkeys for me, just for amazing gear. You know, I've seen lots of people posting about wanting an Epiphone Coronet now. That was pretty much the main guitar for what's his chops? What's the main guy's name? Alex Turner. There we go.
I saw an image of an image, and he was playing that, and I was like, man, he makes that guitar look wicked. And actually, the couple of weeks prior, when I was in 66 Sounds in Denmark Street, they had a silver sparkle relic one.
What?
Yeah, I just
how much?
Custom one. I don't know. It was already sold. But I was like, that is a cool guitar. That is
I wonder what the sales are going to be like on Epiphone Coronets now. Is it going to be like when the Beatles documentary came out and Squire, you know, the Squire Bass 6 became the best-selling bass guitar for Fender and Squire that year?
There's one on Reverb here, 62 original Epiphone Coronet for $5,500.
Oh, really? They're that much now? I still think of those as a bit of a Melody Maker, you know, level guitar.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That sort of money.
I don't know if I'd really pay $5,500.
No. I mean, it sounded very cool, but it is a cool, jangly, one-trick pony, doesn't keep its tuning that well, sort of rock and roll guitar.
What were they using amps-wise? Because, you know, back in the day, I should probably listen to more Arctic Monkeys in some ways. I know a lot of people really rave about them, but I think early on when they basically was just playing like basic American standard Strats into like a Hot Rod Deluxe.
Well, actually, you were close. Yeah, it was, early days, it was Mexican, a white Mexican Stratocaster into an orange combo. I can't remember what the combo was, but it was small enough that you had to sit it on a chair on stage.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was where they started. But this time, Selma treble and bass. I was trying to spot what was back there. It was kind of a dark stage, so it was difficult to see what was going on. Selma treble and bass, though, I spotted, which was being... Why is his name gone again?
Alex Turner.
Alex Turner, there we go. So, yeah. So
it's anyone else in the band.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Sorry, if any of the Arctic Monkeys listen, I really apologise, but yeah, anyone else in the band.
Yeah, so a Selma treble and bass 50 for Alex Turner. The other guitarist was using a Sims Watts, which was pretty cool, like a super old Sims Watts PA, you know, looking amplifier.
Right.
They have such great taste in retro gear, so it's unsurprising. I'm sure there were some other things. There were other amplifiers at the back, which was pretty cool. Their second guitarist was switching between a 335 and an absolutely lovely Black Beauty, which I thought sounded completely incredible. Bass player moving between his normal precision bass for all their older stuff and then newer stuff. He's got one of those little Burn supersonic basses.
Oh, yeah.
Short scale, very nice. Old 60s one, so he had one of those. A newer looking Burns Marquee bass and an Epiphone Jack Cassidy as well for, I think, one track. So that was cool. A cool range of stuff. Couldn't see what he was using amp-wise. He is actually an Ashdown artist. The bass player for Arctic Monkeys, but you know, I have no idea if he's still playing Ashdown stuff.
Right. It's amazing really, because they are definitely one of those bands that sort of, you know, when I first moved to Brighton and I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor was out and everyone's like, yeah, and then I never listened to him for that, but they've headlined Glastonbury 3 times.
Yeah. That's pretty massive.
Which is impressive. 2007, 2013, 2023.
Yeah.
You know, and they've been around for, yeah, that whole, I mean, 2007. I mean, to headline at that point, when I guess they probably had like one album at that point.
I think probably two or three. They put in their first two albums came out in very close succession.
Right. And then same as Muse and same as Radiohead. Both three times. The person who's headlined the most, if anyone was interested, is actually Coldplay and The Cure.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Cure headlined in 86, 1990, 1995, and 2019.
The Killers have played 6 times, not headlined, but played 6 times. I only know that because Brandon Flowers was a guest vocalist on Elton John's set, his last ever live performance, and he happened to mention it whereas as he ushered Brandon Flowers onto the stage.
Wow.
That The Killer's been on 6 times. So, yeah. We need more rock bands, guys. Everyone's played this festival like 3 to 6
you know
times.
What I was thinking about the other day, I was reading an article about it, and it's like, what other... There's so many bands that like played those stages. I'm like, I have no idea who they are. And then also, I was reading about other artists that played. I think at Glastonbury, Lana Del Rey got like... basically escorted off stage because she turned up half an hour late. And then
yeah, she didn't tailor her set by the sounds of it. But I watched a video on that. It looks like she basically just tried to play through. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily her fault.
Again, it's one of those artists that I'm like, I should probably know who this person is more deeply than I actually do. I was like, oh yes, turns out she's the 27th most streamed artist on Spotify of all time. I'm like, oh, definitely behind the times.
Oh, have you not listened to Lana Del Rey? Yeah, she's got some good records. Yeah, the last one's not amazing, but the two or three before that, she seems to release a record every 3 or 4 months. So,
she has
a lot of content.
She's no Omar.
No, exactly, exactly. Well, speaking of Omar, Matt, I did, dear listener, get to see the Mars Volta at Troxy in London, a little 3,000 cap venue.
Very jealous.
It was fantastic. Had the Huberstank bass player, is now their bass player in place of Eva Gardner because Pink is on tour at the moment. So she is off touring with Pink. But my goodness, it was fantastic. Their new drummer, she is absolutely amazing. It was lovely to see Omar and also Marcel Rodriguez Lopez playing keys. We got to talk to him. He was just hanging outside at the pub where we were drinking beforehand. So we went and said hi, me and a couple of friends. That was really nice getting to meet him. And they were absolutely brilliant. They're obviously more a band now. They'd extended out parts, done some more jams. Omar played another one guitar man. No guitar changes for Omar in the entire set. Used a black Music Man Mariposa for the whole set, and it sounded absolutely fantastic. He's back to using orange rocker verbs
and a huge load of cast as well. I mean, basically, I know that from other friends that have seen them quite a few times, I think towards their last run, they were basically like, oh, we're just a jam band now. And now they play. And then when I looked at the set list this time, because that's what sort of like, I'm not sure what it'd be like. And I looked at the set list this time, I was like, oh, they're basically playing like the majority of the first album and then everything else.
The first, one song off of the third record, two songs off of the new album. But yes, it was a really early set. Nothing from Nocturnicate, nothing from Octahedron, nothing from the Bedlam and Goliath. But they also spoke about that. They said, you know, that's not a place that they are at the moment. And the reason that, exactly as you say, and sorry, dear listener, I won't make this a Mars Volta podcast, but we will talk about some guitar gear again shortly. But the reason they ended up being a jam band at the end is because the Mars Volta had three very, very different drummers. They started off with John Theodore, who was absolutely fantastic. Mm. Their second drummer, Thomas Pridgen, amazing, obviously completely different style, incredible style, but famously Pridgen couldn't play any of John Theodore's stuff, and when he did, they really wasn't very good. Then their third drummer, D'Anthony Parks, is like an effects drummer. Like, he'd come up with interesting stuff, but he wasn't chopsy, especially. Mm. I actually loved him the most, but of course he couldn't play Theodore or Pridgen stuff, so they didn't have any of that stuff in their set. And this with their new drummer, I don't have her name to hand, but she's the first drummer they've got on board who can actually play like other people as well as having her own style. So they can do the John Theodore stuff for the first time in a long time. So I guess that's why it was. But it was absolutely fantastic. And
I thought I would also Google the pedal board. I mean, that's the question we all want to know, right? Like,
yes.
What's he got on the floor? And seems like a mix of, I mean, it's definitely a small pedal board, but he's ditched the Line 6 in favour of single compacts again, it seems. So I'm just looking at a thing here. Exotic Wah Micro Boost, VB2W, so Boss Vibrato, the Moog Ring Modulator, DD5, what looks like a Mark 1 DL4 MXR Phase 90. So there's some sort of classic stuff in there as well. Eventide Tricera Chorus, right. Empress Echo System, and the UAD Astra Modulation.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Simplified for him, but still with a really sort of broad range of tones that he can...
Yeah. I realised how much of that his sound is also that Moog ring modulator. It makes so much of his sound. And also the fact that they seemingly have all of the lyrics written on pieces of paper taped to the front of the stage, this picture I'm looking at. So I guess there's a lot of lyrics that they need to remember.
yeah, probably.
But it does make me want a Mariposa even more.
Yeah, there you go. It is a cool guitar. I don't want the Sterling because they're too fine. You know, I think if I was going to get one, I'd have to go full, you know.
Full Omar.
Yeah, get a proper one.
Yeah.
I really like that black and gold one. It's very cool. It's also the guitar that Hayley Williams from Paramore has. I think mentioned that on the podcast before. Well, that's the thing about Hayley Williams. You know, we don't know anything about her personal guitar taste, but when she was doing solo stuff during lockdown, she was playing an old Ibanez ORL-1. Fine, I think. Random guitar for her to be playing. Maybe she just liked it when she tried it in a shop or something like that. Maybe she got given it. Who knows? But that's fine. Weird, but fine. And then she does like a little performance of her solo stuff where she's playing guitar and she's playing a black Music Man Mariposa. No one accidentally owns two Omar Rodriguez Lopez signature guitars. That means she's a fan of the Mars Volta, which is very cool. Because those guitars are wildly different. One's a little, you know, JB mini humbucker in the bridge. The other one's two full-fat humbuckers on a blend control. It's a totally different instrument.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, who isn't a fan of the Mars Volta? That's what I say. If you're not a fan, get out.
Well, if you're not a fan, you've probably stopped listening already because I've prattled on about it for some time.
Yeah, we should move on, Joe. We should move on. What's next in the
world?
Well,
I want to talk about this, you know, what we're going to try. You know, dear listener, I've been recording tracks, doing these little demo examples of things that we've been sent over the last few weeks. Always fun to record and do, but we're going to try something a little bit different this week. We're going to play something real time on the episode. Thanks to the fact that we're now using these Boss Gigcasters, which is basically a mixer interface that Matt and I can have. We can podcast together, and the interface itself has all of Boss effects and Boss amp simulators built into it. So at the same time, I mean, it's why Matt can do those annoying sound effects now, but it also means we can actually play stuff real time. So we'll see how that works out. I think I still like pre-recording stuff, but this is definitely great for being able to talk through things in more detail. So we're going to do a bit of that.
I think as a bit of a first look, or maybe we could do like a questions thing, or maybe it's something for the Patreon where we can sort of dive into a bit of gear and answer a bunch of questions.
Yeah. We'll see. Well, it's also super topical this week because, of course, Matt, this is I've barely spoken to you in the last 2 weeks because this is a pretty big launch for you guys. We're talking, of course, dear listener, about the Boss DM-101. What an absolutely left field release for Boss. Who no one saw this coming.
Indeed. And I've obviously in my job known about it for a long time and been messing around with it for a long time, and it's so super glad to let everyone see it, because you know we don't take it lightly when we say this is the most advanced ultimate analog delay machine on the market. You know, there's loads of analog delays. You know, I saw a comment, someone was like, oh, thanks Boss, what next, another Tube Scream? And it's like, well, if you actually looked at you'd realize that it's not your average analog delay.
Sure. No, it's very different. Interesting that it's part of the DM family as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think of this as kind of a totally different kettle of fish.
Well, I guess it sort of just follows, you know, it wouldn't DD, digital delay, DM, delay machine, so DM2, DM2W, and obviously all the way back to DM1. And this, you know, we started talking about this concept around the same time as sort of RE202.
Right. Bringing back the kidney.
Yeah, very much wanted to create, basically the ultimate analog delay. So it covers everything that basically every other analog delay on the market does, but it does so much more in a in a different way. And that's because the main heart of the circuitry is that it has 8 BBD chips, so Bucket Brigade chips. So I think most other delay pedals on the market are 2, 3.
Maybe how much does a DM2 have?
2.
Right.
I think 2 or maybe 3.
Right.
So 8 allows us to have really complex delays. It allows us to have stereo analog delay. So it's the only, pretty much the only stereo analog delay on the market.
Wow.
It has its own unique depth and character. You know, if you look at something like Electro-Harmonix Memory Man, people love it because of that preamp character and that sort of sound character. So it was important to make sure there was a lot of its own sound characteristics in here. And it allows us to have real analog modulation as well. So the signal path is 100% analog, but it is also digitally controlled. So you've got memories on here, you've got tap tempo, you've got tap divisions, you've got expression input. You can control all of the, you know, controls on the front via MIDI. So very much integrates into a kind of modern pedal board, but at the same time, you can use it straight up like an analog delay, no menus. You can right. just deep dive and go into the control. So I've got it hooked up in mono for the purposes of this, but yeah, obviously full stereo as well. So Joe, any questions, any thoughts?
Yeah, well, I guess, okay, so I'll ask you some layman's questions. Mm-hmm. Looking at about the pedal, when I look at the options, because you've got loads of things that's like reflect, ambience, doubling delay, you know, things like that. These are the modes, dear listener, that you can flick between that give you your overall voicings from the delay. Of course, it has multi-head on there. And that, I guess, for me is, I'm like, what makes this different from the Space Echo? You know, what's the...
Well, so it actually, so multi, you know, if you look at a Space Echo, it's 3 playback heads, a record head, and then you've got 3 playback heads, so you've got playback 1, so just, you know, standard straight boom. And then, you know, 2 slightly longer delay and 3 even longer delay. And then a mix of those gives you that rhythmic sound.
Yeah.
So the way that we've built it in this is obviously there's no tape in here. But what we've done is been able to use the sort of dynamically use the delay chips to give you rhythmic repeats, the same rhythms that you would get in a Space Echo. So effectively it's doing the same thing as a tape echo, the same sort of sounds and the same repeats. But it's doing it all analog. There's no digital replication here. So if I'll give you an example. Let's see if we got some. We'll turn the intensity down a little bit. So we've got. So if I go all the way down on the variation, so you've got a variation control that sort of varies what you're doing in terms of the delay heads, and then at the top, actually, the little preset lights tell you what repeats. So this is, let's see if I can find, let's go to.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
all the way to. So this is tape heads one and two. So you've got those two repeats in quick succession, or right. one and three. And then one and four. And then you've got variations of that. So let's pick one, two, three. And then obviously if we start to... And then let's add in a bit of modulation.
So that modulation is extreme.
Yeah, so very much that sort of warbly tape. Now, if I take all that out and you've got the straight up analog... Obviously, you can get it to put it just on the cusp, give it a little bit of modulation. Wanted to have that sort of like dreamlike.
Very three-dimensional, loads of depth, loads of character to that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's like a little bit more of a sort of fancy delay. You've got kind of a classic, so a classic analog delay here that's got a long repeat. Sorry, I'm talking over the repeat here.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, that sounds great. You've got a couple of options on there that I guess would need explaining. Like, there's one non-linear and ambience as well. So I'm wondering on, like, ambience, how does an analog delay achieve that sort of thing? Because I assume when you say ambience, what we're talking about is the big sort of ethereal soundscapes that we can get out of digital delays.
Yeah, so actually ambience is more like... I guess like the ambience of a room. So what this is doing is because we've got eight BBDs in here, you've actually got two different delays at the same time.
Right.
So if I turn down the variation control, so you've got almost that sort of like reflective. Yeah. I can turn that up.
Love it.
That's like the longest delay you get. Now, if I move up the variation control, you can hear there's like two repeats coming in, so this right. is no variation. And then if I add the variation in, so you get that initial boom, and then you get the kind of ambience afterwards. And then if I turn the variation all the way up, if we give it a bit more. And now give it a bit more modulation.
Now there's so much depth capable with that, with the modulation, so much vibrato in it, like really super slow,
absolutely.
Soupy vibrato.
Just thinking, if I dial back, so that's like the shortest delay you can get. If I start to turn up the modulation, just turn the rate down a bit, turn the depth up, almost like a sort of flanger.
Wow.
And then with that low modulation rate, you can really hear that sort of like pitch tail off at the end. And then you get all the classic oscillation that you want. Yeah, so it's wicked. I just to answer your question earlier, this is non-linear. So let me just give you an idea of the non-linear. So this is kind of like an odd repeat pattern, I guess you would say. Yeah. So it gives you like a, almost like a reverse delay. So here there's like scattered repeats.
Yeah.
If I had, again, just put a bit of modulation in there.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely fantastic. It's a big old price tag, I guess, on a pedal. I mean, you would guess that, dear listener, for something with eight BBD chips in there. $499 US.
Yeah, so about, I think it's come out at about 449 English pounds.
I see.
Which, you know, in some ways, a lot of people would say it's expensive. And then I would say, okay, well... And funny enough, someone sent me a comment earlier. It was like, what small boutique pedal builders are there that make something similar to the Boss DM-101? And the first comment is literally nothing. Like, in terms of the spec, like more BBDs, stereo, tap tempo, digitally controlled, all analog signal path, analog drive through, like all of the elements that's in every analog delay pedal and more. There's literally nothing on the market, and it's cheaper than still a lot of other delay pedals out there,
right,
as well, really. So I think this is, you know, I've had a few people and a few artists we spoke to say that this is kind of the future classic from Boss. I think this is really going to start to find its way onto a lot of pedal boards because, you know, people love the DM2 and, you know, people have loved our digital delay pedals for years, and then to bring the analog side of things back in as well, I think it's really going to start to I think people are really going to start to dig into this and find some really cool and unique sounds that's literally not available anywhere else. And if you want stereo analog delay, or you've never tried it or never thought you'd want to try it, then this is the only product that's going to let you do it.
Absolutely. What about MIDI capability?
Yep. So everything in there is, all the controls on the front are MIDI controllable, including being able to do the tap tempo, change the delay divisions, and change memories as well.
Wow.
So yeah, you can have a different analog delay for every patch, and you can, you know, plug an expression pedal in if you want, or you can do it over MIDI. I was certainly messing around sending sort of MIDI signals to change the feedback intensity, so you can go between patches and change that. The only thing it won't let you do, because it's obviously only doing one delay sound at a time, is seamless carryover between two different patches. You know, if you went from a short delay to a long delay and they were two different modes, obviously it's physically changing analog components inside, whereas in a digital pedal you could have a digital algorithm and it could go into another digital algorithm seamlessly. But to be honest, you know, you're going to be using this as an analog delay, and if you want analog sounds out of it, you're not necessarily going to have like several patches that you're going to be morphing between all the time.
Yeah.
And I found that, you know, I use the classic mode quite a lot and then just use an expression pedal to go between delay times.
Right.
And that sort of does enough for me. But the mode that I've spent the most on, and you won't get a huge feeling for it unless it's in stereo, all the stereo modes do work in mono, is the wide sound. So as I turn up the variation, it starts to add like another delay. You can sort of hear them. And then if I add in like a dotted, you know, for the for those like really big delay pads if I do some volume swells. Hours of fun. Hours of fun, Joe.
Wow. Yeah, there is an awful lot to this pedal. I mean, it sounds absolutely fantastic, Matt. Like, what a great range of things to be able to get in an analog format. Big old purchase for your pedal board, dear listener, but kind of, like you say, there's nothing else that does it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is every other analog delay is an analog delay. You know, yeah. So they've gone, okay, we're building an analog delay circuit, and that's what you've got. Nothing allows the kind of recreation of different analog delay types or sounds still in an all analog realm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is amazing, really.
Well, it is super cool. So there you go, dear listener. That was the Boss DM-101. Tell us what you think. Would you do you mind us doing demos like this? Would you rather we were just talking more, or was this cool? Let us know, because otherwise we don't know. But yeah, get hold of us. Let us know what you think. Worth noting, dear listener, that after Matt and I finish this main episode, we're going to be heading over to our Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where each week we talk about questions and topics that have been raised on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. This week, I think we're going to talk maybe a bit about Carl Harris's Mule Caster that he's bought, and we'll maybe take a little look at all the Mule guitars, because they're so very cool. And possibly Sean DeMary has just picked up a Twilight Pulse Constantine, a brand that I had never heard of before. So maybe we'll take a little look at their range of pedals. But do join us, dear listener, over there once we've finished. Now, Matt, last week, JD and I were talking about this cool new thing that we're going to be doing on Guitar Nerds in partnership with Vintage Guitars and the introduction of their new UK Pro Shop. So they're starting their own custom shop. They've had custom shop style guitars available at very affordable prices for a few years now, but now they're opening it up to you. You can go onto their website, vintageguitarsrus.com, and you can design your own guitar, and they will build it for you. And they're coming out somewhere between like 700 and like £1,400 or £1,600 maybe at their top end. I mean, that's very reasonable for a custom-made guitar. Of course, we're not talking about something that's, you know, US custom shop. We're talking about modified, refinished, respect versions of their standard range of guitars. But they are extraordinarily cool. And I'm still ironing out the exacts of what we're going to do with Vintage, but it looks like we are going to be letting you, dear listener, we're going to let you design a homo. We're going to be building a team built guitar between us. That's the plan, Matt. I realize I haven't even spoken to you about this. You don't know about this yet.
No, I'm assuming we're going to put it out to some sort of vote. But I like, you know, I think this is great. I think it's nice that you can have all of those, you know, quite an extensive set of options. I mean, you know, if you took it above and beyond the options that are on here, like, that's when things would obviously get stupidly expensive. But I mean, sure. You know, just going through this, the fact that you've got, in terms of pickups, you can have Wilkinson, Bare Knuckle, Seymour Duncan, Lace, and Monty's, and then specify make and brand. So you can go, yeah, I want, you know, Monty's PAFs in this, and they'll be like, okay, we'll go and get them. I think that's wicked. You know, it's being UK cool. built and having access to those, I think that's, I can already see like some really cool options for not a lot of money coming out of this.
Yeah, and they do color over color and stuff like that on the finishes.
Absolutely mad.
I've seen like modifications, even if you look on their main Pro Shop page, dear listener, like they've got this vintage V52, which is like their 50 telly sort of thing, in black with a Bigsby on it. It looks like it's got a kill switch cut into the plate as well. So I think they'll go full on. They'll do any modifications you want. You're not just refinishing an instrument. You can kind of do anything with this, as long as it's a body shape from their current catalog. I mean, that's what they said to me, basically. I said, are there any limitations? They were like, as long as it's one of our body shapes, it's fine.
Well, and considering they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 different body shapes.
Yeah.
you've got more than enough to choose from.
What would you do, Matt? What would you have built if you were designing one right now? Looking at some of the inspiration.
Well, I mean, they've already done a sort of relict shell pink HSS Strat. So I'm sort of like, that does look pretty cool.
It does look so cool. They're distressed pink. It's not even quite the shell pink. It's kind of almost a pop pink.
Yeah.
That finish. Like.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, even going on their website now, if you go, you know, V6 icon, which is their sort of Strat style, you know, they've got a Gunhill blue over Sunburst, like a metallic blue over Sunburst for $529. I mean, that itself is a great starting point. You know, I'd totally have something like that and, you know, maybe swap up the pickups or something like that.
Yeah.
I think so. You've got reissued series, which is the standard model, and then you've got Icon, which I think is their distressed model. I mean, they even a reverse Jimi Hendrix white white Strat. I mean, I like the fact that they've gone, I'd be tempted to do something like Gilmore red Strat with lace sensors in or something like that.
That's a great idea.
That would be quite cool. But I mean, the amount of times I've seen Thomas Blug at NAMM or some other guitar show, and he's always playing his vintage V6.
Is he?
Yeah, always. And they sound really good. They do sound really good. I guess the thing is that you forget, because I even just had to have a look, they've been around for over 25 years.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily see them, not always necessarily pushed in your sort of bigger guitar shops. They tend to be sort of confined sometimes to the smaller shops and stuff like that. Yeah. But they, you know, I've always thought they look like cool guitars, but just not always had the kind of chance to sit there and play them. But they've got, you know, even a relict, you know, 65, you know, Jazzmaster type thing. Imagine that with a mastery system. Ugh. Any color you want. Options are
So much. I've been thinking about, because I was like, oh, maybe I'll get one for myself as well after we do the build. And I was kind of thinking about what I want. I've changed several times, obviously, and I'm sure I'll change again. But right now, I'm into their VSA 500, which is their 335 with a Bigsby, three humbuckers, in Jeep green. I want it like a relics Jeep green.
That's basically, isn't that the Chris Cornell?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. Exactly what I'm doing. But I'm thinking maybe like a heavy relic Jeep green over black.
Right, okay.
We'll see. I'm not sure. I'm still fleshing that idea out. But they've got a couple of colours that I love. Their Jeep green looks fantastic. And Gunhill blue is the other colour that I think looks amazing, like somewhere between Pelham blue and Daphne blue, dear listener, like a muddied Daphne. It's a lovely color.
Yeah. I don't know. I forget how many guitars they actually make.
It's a huge range. So the idea, Matt, or what we're going to do, I gave them two options and they've gone for the latter. Initially, I was like, what if Matt designs a guitar and I design a guitar and we let the listeners vote and whoever wins, they make that guitar. But they've gone for this idea. Each week, I'm going to present an option to the listeners for them to vote on. People can vote however they want. They can DM us, do it something on Instagram, our Facebook group. They can email us, however. Send courier pigeon. Doesn't matter. But each week, people tell me what they want, and I'll work out who's said the most of each thing. And so, like, one week, it would be, like, what body shape, and I'll give people options. You know, it'll be Strat, Les Paul, something like that. So And the next week we'll do neck, we'll do pickups, we'll do finish. We'll keep it simple. I'm not going to do everything. I'll keep, you know, we'll just get the because we'll be here forever otherwise.
Yeah.
We'll keep it simple. And also it means that week by week I can make sure the options suit the previous thing. So we don't end up with too much of a Homer. You know, we don't end up with, I don't know, a Les Paul with a tele neck and Strat pickups in it or something.
Les Paul with a tele neck. Although, you know, they have got this, they have got this tele on here with a Bigsby, a kill switch, two controls and a blade selector. So there's no reason why you couldn't go a little Homer on this one if you really wanted to.
Well, we'll see. It'll be up to the listeners, really, won't it?
It will indeed. Who knows? Who knows? But yeah, that's, I mean, I'm excited to see. And again, at good prices, you know, we talked about Gordon Smith before in the past and those sort of affordable prices. So I think it's nice to be able to design your own guitar and come back at, you know, not crazy money. You know, I've been reading, you know, I read a lot of Guitarist Magazine, Guitar World. Certainly Guitarist Magazine are really good at the moment for pushing sort of like smaller builders and boutique builders. And there's like some guitars that I just go, oh man, I'd love to own that. And you just, they're just too expensive. So it's kind of nice to be able to see a brand like this offer. Yeah, I think, you know, just some your own guitar for a more affordable price point.
Yeah, great. Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. It's a way to be interesting and unique without necessarily breaking the bank. So we will see. We'll see how this ends up. Anyway, dear listener, it is about time we did topic of the week. Actually, I tell you what, just before we do, dear listener, if you are in the UK, sorry, everyone else at the moment, I noticed actually Mark Packham messaged us about this earlier, Matt Knight, that there is T-Rex Replicator Juniors on Reverb. Looks like they're being dished out at a very affordable price. $275 for a Replicator Junior. Would you get one?
I would.
I want a real tape echo.
I mean, the cool thing about this is, as well, is it's like it records to basically like cassette tape.
Yeah.
and the fact that they're, you know, they're handmade in Denmark, that's cool. I wonder if you could put a normal cassette in it.
I don't think so. I think they're a weird size. They're that weird. It's just that little top bit if you're looking at the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For $275 though, because these were what, $599?
I think the full ones that had like modulation options were around £600. The junior, which just has basic controls, was like £400, but it is now $275.
Wow.
Available on Reverb at the moment. Do check it out, dear listener, if you're interested in something that could be a super cool tape echo. I think it's well. Very, very good.
Idea 101.
Yes, or dear listener, you could do that.
But no, I mean, you know, they've had those units out for quite a while. So
ages since we were at GAC, I remember them coming out, and I was very excited about them. I remember the full size ones; they came in their own like leather pouch. But there wasn't really much else that was like £500-600 at the time. Like the H9 was about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if I could afford it, I'd definitely be ordering one of the Benson drum echoes that they're sort of reissuing. I don't even know how much they are. The ones that they had at NAMM.
Yeah.
$1,799. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. But ultimately, a very, very cool product.
Yeah. Yes, a very cool product indeed. Now, we're going to, dear listener, we're going to spin the wheel so we can talk about the topic of the week as our finisher for this week. So let me do that. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Okay, and this week, the winner of Spin the Wheel and the person that gets to choose the topic for next week's podcast is Ross Edwards. I don't know if Ross Edwards has already won. We've got to that point. I'm like, we're 25 episodes in, Matt. I have no idea. There have been at least 20 winners. I know we missed a few weeks here and there, but potentially you've won twice, Ross. Who knows?
That's the main thing. Have we made sure that all of these people have got their prizes?
I haven't sent any of them out yet. they're coming. It's because I'm having something very specially made for them, and it's nearly. I think they're here week after next. Bright Onion Pedals are making something that's going to go in every one of the goodie bags, and I wanted to wait until I had all of those.
Oh well, now we know. Nice update.
Yeah, yeah. I have let people know, but it's sorry about that, everyone. But I promise you, they're coming. Believe me. Believe in me. Anyway, last week the winner was Andy McKenzie, and Andy said what he wants to talk about is the best value hollow body guitar for heavier music. The news about a possible Epiphone Dave Grohl signature is quite nice, as is the upcoming EVH hollow body. So, yeah, that's a great question, because so many hollow bodies have such a very, very specific, weird, mid-honky tone. They make themselves not that well-suited. And that's kind of where I love the look of hollow bodies. But, you know, I remember when I had the ES-175, it was like a dream guitar that I couldn't use, you know, for anything other than a very specific application. Obviously,
when they say heavy music, what are we talking here?
He mentioned Dave Grohl. So he said Dave Grohl, and I wouldn't exactly call the Foo Fighters heavy music.
Gain, I guess, don't they?
Sorry, they
use a fair bit of gain.
Yeah, sure.
But then are we ruling out thin line tellies?
I mean, no, not necessarily. Not necessarily. If you think that's a great option, I mean, who's that fella who's had a signature model thin line Telecaster for forever? And it was like Korean made. It was like a through neck.
Jim Adkins?
Jim Adkins, yeah. What a great guitar that was.
Sold loads of those.
Yeah.
Loads of those. I think it's difficult, really, because technically they would all... guitar would work for anything you want it to work for. I mean, you know, you wouldn't have necessarily ever pictured Kirk Hammett from Metallica playing 59 Les Paul, but he does.
Yeah, sure.
I guess the biggest thing is feedback. So if you're using a big hollow body, like you say, for 175, they're just going to feed back on stage. Yeah. But, you know, interestingly, in terms of a big rock sound, I don't know if you saw, Joe, the That Pedal Show interviewed Noel Gallagher. And his rig, he did the early rig, which is his three, he was playing a 3-4-5 into a Marshall valve state at a WEM, and it just sounded like amazing. And he's like, no pedals. He's like straight in, just cranked. So, you know, those hollow bodies do work, but I guess when you're using something that's maybe a bit more vintage, the paths are a bit more low gain. I would say avoid anything fully hollow body, because you know, like that 175, they just don't sound ideal for that. I don't think they match with the gain particularly well.
You don't get that punch, basically. No. It's a more muted, it's a softer, longer tone, and it's difficult if you want if pick attack is very important. They're just not the resonance of them just isn't right for that. I mean, you want to talk about affordable guitar. I mean, so what we're essentially saying, Matt, is hollow body's fine as long as they've got a big old center block.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I think as long as you've got a set in a block, you're probably okay.
You're probably okay. And you know who does a whole range of really affordable hollow bodies with a big old center block? Gretsch with their Streamliner series.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea was they're like, here's some cool retro-looking Gretches, but incidentally, they actually work on, you know, everything. Because that's the problem, isn't it? If they'd have made them completely hollow, affordable, affordable big hollow guitars by Gretsch, they're at the price point where a lot of young players and beginners will buy them. And then when they don't, you know, they're not going to know how to deal with the feedback issues you get. So it would have given the whole range a bad name. So they did an excellent job of making the Streamliners actually really, really good for you know, any application. And they're always updating it. There's always new colors. There's so much in the series.
Yeah, I think, I think you could play, there's an Epiphone 335 type thing. But then I'm also going, well, what about picking something like the Reverend? So they do the Air Sonic, which is semi-hollow.
Yeah. Doesn't the hole go the whole way through?
I think so, if I remember right. Something like this. That's the one, yeah. So it's the hole goes right the way through. That's obviously a bit more quirky, because obviously what usually happens in these situations, these kind of questions, is someone wants something that looks completely traditional as well. I mean, if they like the Dave Grohl, I mean, I think we talked about it maybe briefly. I certainly saw a few articles about it. But the Emily Wolfe signature Sheraton.
Yeah. Now available in white as well as black.
Yeah, white and black with the kind of diamond cutaways. I mean, that's very cool.
Wait, is it diamond cutaways? I didn't think it was.
Yeah, like the Trini Lopez, yeah.
Oh, that's very cool.
Hmm. But yeah, I think, yeah, you could go Gretsch, I think. But if you want to go more down the rock route and you want the kind of hollow body feel, then you could go down PRS SE hollow body.
Of course. Why didn't I think of that? That should have been right on the tip of my tongue. I think those SE hollow bodies were fantastic.
I think when a lot of people say hollow body, you instantly jump to a 335 or a Gretsch or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I always think SE, you know, well, I think PRS hollow body. I always think of Incubus, because I was a massive fan of Mike Einzinger, and that's what he played for years and years. They're on sale at the moment in some dealers. I think you can buy one for $579, normally $999.
Amazing deal. Do you remember when they did that exotic wood series? I know, dear listener, if you've been listening for a few years, we spoke about them quite a lot at the time that they came out, but they did a whole range of exotic wood versions of their SE models.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is. Maybe there were lots of them, or maybe they weren't popular, but I think they ended up being very affordable. And so, you know, so I think you could pick those up for like $499, maybe for like a hollow body exotic wood PRS SE, which was amazing. They were fantastic. I wonder if they're still undesirable and you can find those on the secondhand market for an affordable price.
Yeah, I reckon so. But yeah, maybe if you want to go down the real rock route, then PRS. If you want something that's going to do a bit more of the kind of classic cleans as well, go down the 335 route perhaps. And then, yeah, look for something with a center block. If you want to go heavy, I think you're right, Joe. You've got to go center block. Otherwise, you're going to have some problems.
Yes, exactly. That is very much the case. Now, that does in fact bring us up to pretty much the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, dear listener. Matt and I are going to head over to Patreon. We're going to talk about some of the topics from our Facebook group and some other things like that. If you want to get in touch with us to ask any questions or for any reason at all, we especially want to know what you thought of the demo this week. But you can email us info@guitarnerds, DM us on Instagram, ask in the open forum on Facebook, however you want. If you're a Patreon supporter, contact us through that. We're heading over to Patreon now. You can join us there. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how to sign up. Thank you for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Well, that's it for another week of the Guitar Nerds podcast, which only leaves me to say thank you eternally and very, very muchly to all of our top-tier Patreon backers. Thank you very much to Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Carl Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hiziao Kaduaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Partick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short,
Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and the wonderful Moog Gravitt.